Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
All right, if you've got your Bibles this morning, let's go ahead and find Revelation chapter 21. Revelation chapter 21. We're only going to be looking at the first eight verses today. We will catch up the rest of chapter 21 next week with the beginning of chapter 22. And then we'll finish out chapter 22 on the 8th. That's kind of the layout how we're headed the next couple weeks. All right, well, last week we kind of concluded at chapter 20, and we saw there that Satan and his enemies, death and Hades, and everybody is now dealt with, and they are done. And they those who follow after Satan and the beasts and all that, they have been sentenced to their final state. And so today we turn to the good stuff. We turn to John telling us what heaven is going to be like, or the abode of the blessed, or the arrangements for those of us who follow after Jesus, what that's going to look like. And so today we'll begin that process. Let's go ahead and read our verses this morning. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and the sea was no more. Verse 2. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Verse 3. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man, and he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eye, and death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. Also, he said, Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and in the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. One who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. Last one, verse 8. But the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. All right, so John, now that, as we said before, judgment has been laid out, and those who follow the beast have been cast into hell, John now sees a new vision, a vision of heaven. And the key word here, and we'll go back to the beginning and just kind of walk through the verses this morning. Verse number 1 and 2, the key word there is new. John says he sees a new heaven, a new earth, and then eventually he says he sees a new Jerusalem. Now the key word there is new. Why is it the key word? Because John uses it to describe what he is seeing is different than what he has experienced on earth. So in other words, it's not just like it's new in the fact of I have this one thing and I got a new version of it. Like it's not like when you go to the store and get a new iPhone, right? You had an old iPhone and you got a newer version of the same one you had. Or like when you go trade in a car and you had this kind of truck and you got the exact same type of truck. It's just a new to you. That's not, John is describing something that is totally different than anything that he has experienced before. So that's why he uses the word new. So whatever heaven is going to be, and whatever he's going to describe for us, and as we get to next week, we'll see that some of it is just a little incomprehensible, to be honest with you. But whatever it is wholly different than anything John has experienced on this side of heaven while he was walking around on earth. He's never experienced anything like what he saw in this vision of heaven, and so it is new. Now, when he describes he starts off by talking about the new heaven and the new earth. Let me just kind of give you a plug here for next week. John's going to give, if you finish out, and I would encourage you to do this this week, if you finish out reading Revelation 21, you will see that John doesn't really describe the new heaven and the new earth, right? So that part is a mystery. Like, there's not much in the Bible about the new heaven and new earth. What John does describe in detail is the new Jerusalem, the new, like, capital city of God's heaven, if you want to look at it in that language. So I'm in a, like, this is just, you know, inquiring minds here. What's new heaven and new earth going to look like? You know, I mean, we don't know. It's going, I mean, if what John does describe is any indication, it's going to be pretty amazing, right? You know, I just can't think. I got a story to tell here in a minute that'll be kind of this same vein. But, like, I love looking at, like, the Hubble telescope pictures, or now the James Webb telescope pictures, because it's just fascinating to me to see all of that out there that's, like, so far away that it took thousands of years, so to speak, for the light to get to us, according to science. And it's, like, just amazing. And so when I think of heaven, I'm like, man, it's got to be better than that, right? And so, but what John will describe is this new heaven. He begins doing that, or New Jerusalem, he begins doing that here. He says it is a holy city and a bride adorned for her husband. Now, this is the second time that this marriage language has come up. The first time was in chapter 19 when John was discussing believers and how they were the bride of Christ. Well, here in this context, and in a little bit, next week, this angel will come and he'll say, hey, let me show you the bride adorned for her husband. Well, he's not talking about you and I. He's talking about the city, because contextually, John describes it as a bride adorned for her husband. What do these two images tell us? In other words, they tell us that heaven itself is pure, holy, and, as I wrote in my note, all decked out for God, right? You know, it's a display of God's abundance, riches, and glory. It is then the New Jerusalem is ready to accept its place in God's economy of history. In other words, it is the epicenter of heaven. Whatever this New Jerusalem is, and again, we'll detail what it looks like next week, but it is the epicenter of God's heaven. Right? So John sees this new Jerusalem, this new heaven, this new earth coming down. And why? Because the other ones, the language of Revelation 21 is the other ones are passing away. They are no longer needed. In other words, the earth that we live in, the heavens that we see in the sky, the sun and moon, they are there for a finite purpose in God's plan. And one day, when God closes the book on this kind of season of history, if you want to look at it that way, guess what? There will be something new that is wholly different than what we experience today. And so all of this serves a purpose for today, but it won't serve a purpose in the future. Thus, God has got to bring something new in to serve the purposes that he has. All right, so let's move on. Because after John sees this new heaven and new earth, he hears two voices, okay? The first one in verses 3 and 4 is a voice from the throne, or a voice from heaven. So he doesn't describe who it is. He just says a voice from the throne. And in verses 3 through 4, the key word, so new was the key word in verses 1 and 2. The key word here is in that, in one of the first few words inside the quotes, behold the dwelling place of God. That word dwelling is the key word here in verses 3 and 4. Now, here's what's interesting about that word dwelling, okay? In the most basic sense, it means home or house, right? So in one sense, what the voice from the throne is saying to John, and therefore to the first readers, and then to me and you today, is that heaven is God making his home with his people. Okay? So that in some sense is what it means. God is making his home, his eternal home, with his people. However, here's a more interesting fact that we can learn from this word. All right, so the word is dwelling, right? Now, follow with me. When the Old Testament was translated into Greek. So it, or the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. Okay, that's the language the Israelites, Jews still use today. Hebrew, right? It was originally written in Hebrew. But along the way, Greek became the most popular language. It's the language that the New Testament is written in. All right? Well, at some point, smart people said, hey, why don't we translate the Old Testament from Hebrew into Greek? Because that's what we all speak, right? Makes sense. Here's the fascinating part. When they did that in the Old Testament, and when in the Old Testament it speaks about the tabernacle or God's like mobile worship center, guess what word they used? Dwelling. So, what can we say? Well, okay, Pastor, what's all that mean? Here's the point. It's not just that God is creating His eternal home with His people, but it's that God is creating His eternal home of worship with His people. In other words, there's not another church building in heaven. You know, on Sunday in heaven, we're not all going to go to our little churches in heaven, because there's no more need for that, because God is the epicenter, like, and I use this in quotes, so take it in quotes, in the flesh, like God is there in person, in reality, face to face kind of thing. And so there's no more need for that, because we're in His presence, because heaven is His eternal home of worship with His people. Right? And so it means that He'll be with them forever and ever and ever and ever and ever again. Right? And Paul says it this way. Now, I love Paul's quote because, again, it reminds us that we don't see fully today. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13:12, here's what he says. Now, meaning today, we see in a mirror dimly. In other words, when we look toward heaven, it's like looking in a room that's dimly lit. But then, that day, we'll see face to face. Now, I know in part, I know half the story. Then shall I know fully, even as I have been known fully. Right? In other words, Paul is saying, hey, we know part of the story today. And next week, when we get to John's big description of heaven, you kind of get like he's doing the best he can do to describe it. Right? So here's how I view this kind of idea of, man, God's making His eternal dwelling, eternal home of worship with His people, His eternal dwelling place with them, and all that kind of stuff. The way I look at it, coupling that with what Paul says, here's the way I see it, okay? All right. So y'all know this is a silly illustration, but it works. All right? Y'all know, I think I've mentioned before, I keep like a top 10 list of best meals I've ever eaten, okay? It's all up here. I don't have it written down anywhere. It's like all up here, okay? And so, I realize a lot of them deal with seafood, by the way. I don't know if there's a common theme there, one of them was, we went to Daytona before we had kids with my parents and my sister. Two of them from that trip are on the list. We had grouper at this place called Inlet Harbor. Sadly, my mom and dad went there years later and said it was terrible. But that night, great. It was phenomenal. And they gave you a big portion, too. They didn't, like, skimp you like some swanky restaurants do. Cost you a fortune and you're still hungry after you left. That just irritates. Anyway, that's a side point. So anyway, so the last one to make the list was, like, when Holly turned 40, okay? However many years ago that was. Just a few, one or two, maybe three. I can't remember. Four? Oh, wow. See, I was trying to help you out. All right, so 4 years ago, that's right, it was 2020, right? Yeah. So, all right, COVID year, we go to Myrtle Beach, right? By ourselves, no kids. Right? All right, so we ate some decent places, but like one on the list was, hey, I want to go to one of those Brazilian steakhouse places that's like the meat fest, right? So you kind of don't eat a lot that day and you kind of build up, you know, all right? And so we go and we're there early, like when the doors open, okay? There's us and like three other couples and we go in, you know, so they're getting everything ready and I don't know what all I ate that night. It was all delicious, right? And I'm about ready to tap out, like I'm done. right? Tap out. And this dude, this waiter, no, you know, like, have y'all, if you've never been, like, there's meat on a stick, right, on a sword, basically, and they walk around, and then they have a knife in their pocket, and they have this little, like, plate at the end, and they carry it around like this, right? This is how they carry it, like this. And they come up to your table, and you're like, yeah, I'd like a piece of that. They set it down, and they slice you a piece off, okay? That's the deal. So out of the kitchen comes a dude. He's not carrying like this. He is carrying like the side of a dinosaur. It's like this. It is a platter. Like, I mean, it's huge. And there's this meat on it. And of course, you know, hey, what's that, right? I mean, you know, I've eaten about everything else they had. Like, what's this? So, you know, our little waiter comes over and I'm like, hey, bud, what's that guy carrying? And he gives me the Brazilian name. I don't remember what it is. He goes on and on and on. And all I heard was beef ribs. And I was like, oh. Here's the story. Because I think prior to this, we had been invited over to Easter dinner and somebody had smoked beef ribs. And it was like the best thing I'd ever eaten. Like beef just falling apart in your mouth. And I was like, I can make space in there for some of this. And so I said, hey, you know, the guy brings the whole, I'm not kidding. It's like this. It's not, he ain't kidding, like this. And so it's like beef ribs that are like this big with like meat on the top and underneath and around. And I'm like, hey, but I ain't got a room for like a whole one. Just like slice me off the edge or whatever, just to taste. I thought I had eaten good meat that night. It was like, you know, dog food compared to the, and it was really good. But that when that guy slivered that beef rib meat off on my plate and I put it in my mouth, I was like, this is what beef is supposed to taste like. It was like I had not eaten all night until I ate that little sliver of meat. It was delicious. And in hindsight, I was like, dang it, we should have come like an hour later and I could have just said, hey, just leave the platter here, right? I don't need anything else. Let me just have this, right? It was phenomenal. Like, it was so good. Like, oh, it was so good. Anyway, in some strangely weird way, how I felt about that experience of I thought I had eaten really good until I had that. And had I known it was going to be that good, I would have just waited till that good got done cooking back there, and I would have just had that all night. In the same way, I think that's a little of the way we look at heaven, or the way heaven is going to be. Like, it's going to be great in our minds right now, but man, it's going to be like so much better when we get there. Like, I thought about this morning, okay? I thought about this morning. So there have been people in my life who've passed away who I was very close with. My grandmother, my grandfather, Holly's had family members who've passed away. And there's moments in life sometimes where if we're not careful, we kind of like begrudge God. Like, hey, why'd you have to take them that early? Like, I would love to have had a few more years with that person. But I often wonder, or I wondered this morning, I don't know, I may be wrong, but I wonder this morning if, like, when we get to heaven, we'll kind of be like, man, I'm so sorry, Lord. This is, like, so much. I'm sorry for begrudging you for taking them to this great place when I wasn't ready, but you were, right? Because it's, like, that good. It's going to be that amazing. Anyway, that's it. It's because John struggles to describe how awesome it's going to be. And the high watermark of this entire passage is not just that God is creating his creating his forever home of worship with his people. The high watermark is actually later in this verse when he says he will dwell with them and they will be his people and God himself will be with them as their God. This is what makes heaven heaven. Like, heaven with all the cool stuff, the way John describes it, with all the gold and jewels and riches and pearly gates and golden streets, is amazing. Life without sin is awesome. But here's the reality. It's nothing like what heaven will be like. And heaven will be heaven because God will be there. It would be a cool place. it would not be heaven. It would be an amazing experience. But what makes heaven heaven is that second half of verse number 3. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. That's the cool part. That's the amazing part. And that's what's going to make heaven truly amazing. Now, that because of that, there are benefits for you and I as believers. In verse 4, the voice from heaven labels 5 benefits. And I want you to notice them. I've got them on your outline. I believe they're on the right side. And they've got a little box with some arrow, like a little arrow thing with another text box in there. Here's the thing. They're all listed on there. Here's the thing. All of these, not 100%, so this isn't, I'm trying to paint with a broad but not too broad of a brush, right? Most of the emotions that are the actions that are listed on this paper or in this verse that are on your outline, they're negative emotions. Now, sometimes do we cry because we're filled with so much joy and amazement? Yes, okay? But like, death shall be no more. Tears, mourning, pain. Most of the time, these are negative emotions that are responses to something bad happening in your life, right? So why would heaven be devoid of all of these negative emotions? Because the causer of these negative emotions, not all the time, but a lot of the time, is related to sin, right? Hey, look, listen to me. Why do our loved ones die today? Not because they sinned in particular, but because we live in a world that is sin-cursed in general. Death is a result of living in a world that is cursed by sin. Mourning and crying and all of that. Hey, listen, when you go back and you read the first chapters of Genesis, do you read Adam and Eve crying in chapter 1 and 2? No. You don't. You know when that starts? Chapter 3, after Adam and Eve have both bitten the fruit off of the tree they shouldn't have. Right? Sin causes these negative emotions because they are the results of sin-cursed world that we live in. So here's the cool part. God has already dealt with the sin aspect. Last week we talked about he threw Satan and his minions and death and Hades and all of the bad of this world, all of the sin in this world is thrown into hell not to be relevant anymore. And so now the voice from heaven is saying God is also going to deal with the emotions that are associated with or the result of sin. And so God deals with the root cause and the effects or and the symptoms, so to speak. And so he says for believers, once we get to heaven, we don't have to worry about dealing with all of those negative emotions before. Why? Because look what it says. For the former things have passed away. In other words, those things serve a purpose in this world. They don't serve a purpose in the next one. All right. Now, verses 5 through 8. John hears a second voice. This time it is clear that John hears God himself speak. And God kind of has 3 kind of topics of conversation. He gives a general message. He gives a message to believers and a reminder to the earth dwellers or to believers, however you want to look at it. Here's the first thing God says. He makes 2 amazing statements. He says, it is done, and I am making all things new. I'm going to talk about it is done really quickly, okay? that phrase, it is done, is very similar to the phrase that Jesus uses on the cross, it is finished. Now, there are 2 different Greek words, okay? They're not the same word. They're 2 different words, but they're structured in the exact same way. They're both, I love this verb in Greek because we have nothing like it in English. It's called a perfect verb. What a perfect verb means is that an action is done and completed, but the effects of that action never end. Okay? So when Jesus is on the cross and he says, it is finished. What is he meaning? He's meaning that the plan, very basically, the plan of salvation is complete. But the effects of the plan of salvation being completed will never end. That's pretty cool. Now, so when we get to God in Revelation 21, and he says, it is finished, it is done. What is he saying? I have completed the history of the world, but the effects of me completing all that I plan to do will never end. In other words, all that the things that God has done to bring about salvation and grace and mercy and goodness into this world, he has completed that process, that which he set out to do before the foundation of the world, as we've read in Revelation. It is now completed, but the effects of that never end. They keep on going. Therefore, he can say in verse 5, I am making all things new. This part of the plan is completed. The next part of the plan is about to roll out, and I am making all things new. Why? How can he do that? He says, I am the Alpha and the Omega. I'm the beginning and the end. It begins with me and it ends with me. I am the Creator, the Sustainer. And so God is moving his people toward their final state, in which they will dwell with him forever. His promise to believers. So we got another promise to believers. We'll look at some more in the weeks ahead as well. God says he will provide water for their souls, which John talked about a lot from Jesus in his gospel. He will provide an inheritance or a heritage for them, and he will be their God, and they will be his children. In other words, you have all of these great promises to his people. And then the last thing that John records God saying, in verse 8, it is a kind of a cautionary tale, if you want to look at it that way. Because God talks about all of these actions. Let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. And he says, if you are engaged in these 8 actions, right, you're not going to make it. In other words, you're not going to make it into heaven. Right, that's what he says. All of their portion will be in the lake of fire that burns with sulfur, which is the second. In other words, people who continually do these things have no part in God's kingdom. Why? Because those actions are not equivalent with God or his people in the way that we should live and we should act. In other words, we could look at it this way. This would be kind of the encouragement for you and I today, is if those actions or characteristics, or however you want to look at it, are not indicative of the people who are going to be in heaven, then why in the world would you and I want to engage in them on this side of heaven? Right? In other words, if we claim to follow Christ and we claim to love Jesus, there's no way we should be involved in those types of activities, especially continually over and over and over again as a pattern of the way that we live our life. Yes, there is forgiveness. I am not discrediting that, right? We talked about that extensively in 1 John when we looked at chapter 1, verse 9, right? But the idea is that that should not be the pattern of action for the people who make up God's heavenly, eternal heaven, right? All right, so what do we look at today? Let's kind of draw this down to a close today as we wrap up this morning. I think there's 3 ideas. number one, and we've seen some of these before. Number one, believers will receive rewards from the Lord, right? I know this side of heaven, sometimes it looks like, why am I doing all that I'm doing? It is not making a difference. Well, friend, I can tell you based off of chapter 21 that one day it will, right? One day all the hard work that you've put in to live like Christ and to let the Holy Spirit flow through you and out of you into the world, into your circle of influence, one day God will reward you for each and every action that you've done of how you've tried to live a consistent Christ-like life throughout your work, in your school, and in every aspect of your life. So hang in there, right? A couple months ago, we had the memory verses, Galatians 6, verse 9, right? And it says, do not be weary in doing good, for in due season you will reap your reward if you do not give up, right? I think we see that we see the end of that today, in the sense that we see that one day if we don't give up, we will be rewarded by the Lord. To quote REM, one day it's the end of the world as we know it, right? One day this world will end, and it will not be the same in the next one, right? So while we live and we work and all that, I think we need to remember what kind of the New Testament authors tell us is that we are, the word they use is sojourners. We are travelers through this world, because this is not our home. It is a, to quote another artist, Carrie Underwood, it is our temporary home. Like we are moving and we are transitioning to something better and something greater. And then lastly, we end at the high water mark. What I said earlier was the high water mark for this section. Heaven is heaven, because God will be there. Anything less of that would not be heaven. But heaven is heaven, because God's there. And I look forward to enjoying it with you.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.